Be number 21-11104, Hal Jenkins versus Prime Insurance Company and other defendants.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Brent Savage. I'm a lawyer in Savannah, Georgia, and I represent Hal Jenkins and CLJ. CLJ is a medical group that performed plastic surgery on Mr. Jenkins' daughter. She died in February of 2013. For the first time in her life, the principal in CLJ, Nedra Dodds, found herself after practicing for more than 15 years, some of which was in emergency medicine, as a defendant in a medical malpractice case. She had insurance with a company known as Prime Insurance Company from Sandy, Utah, and she forwarded the claim to them. The man who handled the claim has been dismissed by Judge Boulay in this case. He lists himself as the claim supervisor, comma, lawyer. There are really three issues before the court. The first is whether or not David McBride, who is the claim supervisor slash lawyer, was properly dismissed on the statute of limitation. The second is whether a non-licensed broker who did not hire a broker in Georgia, who sold Nedra Dodds and CLJ this policy, that listed on the front of the policy that it had been filed with the Georgia Insurance Commissioner and comported with Georgia substandard insurance laws, all of which is false,
got dismissed. Is the third issue whether we have jurisdiction to consider any of that?
Yes, it is. It is.
Maybe let's go to that first.
Sure.
Why you don't suggest that the transfer to the District of Utah was improper, do you?
It happened, and we've had some discovery there. That's not a big issue to me.
You're not pushing us.
No, ma'am.
Right.
No, Your Honor. For the first time in my life, which is 43 years of doing this, I'm like homeless. Where I'm stuck in this case is the Tenth Circuit says in the McGeorge case, they're not going to consider anything that Judge Boulay said in his order because it was done in the Northern District of Georgia. So I have no right to appeal there, and I think Judge Boulay, who's a 82nd Airborne, smart guy, entered a final order as to the defendants, McBride and Evolution Brokers. He entered a judgment, and I think that's got to be appealable. We're gone if we can't have an appeal here. We've had it because the Tenth Circuit has said we are not going to review.
Let me ask you a question.
Judge Boulay. Yes, sir.
A question about that.
Right.
Under Rule 54B, the district court had it in his power to direct entry of a final judgment as to one or more, but fewer than all of the claims or all of the parties. He didn't do that in this case. Could you not have asked the district court while the case was still in Georgia to enter a 54B order?
I'm sure we could have. But what we took it as is a final order as to these two defendants. They're gone, McBride. And entered a judgment.
That.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, as to they're gone. The remainder of the case has gone to the district court in Utah.
Right. And he's allowed it to proceed. They filed a motion to dismiss out there, and we're
54B
going.
Says that the court may direct entry of a final judgment as to one or more, but fewer than all of the claims or parties, only if the court expressly determines there is no just reason for delay. It's the second sentence, though, that I want to highlight for you. The second sentence in the rule says, otherwise, any order or other decision, however designated, that adjudicates fewer than all the claims or the rights and liabilities of fewer than all of the parties does not end the action as to any of the claims or parties and may be revised at any time before the entry of judgment adjudicating all of the claims and all of the parties.
Right.
What's to stop you from going back to the district court in Utah and saying, I believe the district court in Georgia made a mistake, and I'm filing a motion with you, you now have jurisdiction over the entire case, to reconsider the determination by the judge in Georgia, and here's why he's wrong. The judge looks at you and says, I've read what he wrote, I'm not changing that. Motion for reconsideration denied. Then that case goes along its merry way in Utah. An appeal goes up to the 10th Circuit. At that point, you've had a determination by a district court judge in Utah, well within the jurisdiction of the 10th Circuit, denying the motion to reconsider. Couldn't you appeal that to the 10th Circuit?
We would try. You know, I do arguments, I just try cases, but I do arguments from time to time, and I've been before Your Honor. What is hard for a lawyer like me who tries a case a month is to argue before very smart appellate judges. We are going into the state of Utah for Hal Jenkins and for CLJ. We don't understand when Judge Boulay entered this order what the law of Utah was. We've been transferred out there. I mean, I got 10 lawyers. So, you probably have a good idea. What I worry about, though, is that that court, the 10th Circuit, will say, you know, you're really going around your elbow to get your arm. You're really doing by indirection what you can't do by direction. But it's probably if you're...
You see, it seems to me you've got a pretty good fairness claim here. You can't be shut out of a right to appeal.
One would hope.
But it seems to me the problem is that all of this is still interlocutory until the whole kit and caboodle is wrapped up and there's a final judgment by the district court in Utah. This case is not over. And if that's the case, I don't know how we get around 54B because the language is really, really clear that in the absence of a certification, it's not final. There's nothing in 1292B that makes it final.
Right.
The collateral order doctrine doesn't help you any here. So it seems to me that there's this problem of how do you get to be heard. But I'm just wondering whether you don't have a right to go to the 10th Circuit upon the completion of the case in Utah.
I mean, that's what we thought. I mean, the 10th Circuit is the only circuit in the United States that does this. Every other circuit allows the decisions of the transferring court to travel with the case. They don't.
And that's actually one among the problems that I have. If we create a rule, we can't have a rule just for cases that were transferred to the 10th Circuit.
Sure.
We have to interpret the rule based on what would happen
right.
In every case. And so in every other circuit, you then have an order that was set aside whether it's inconsistent with the interlocutory appeal rules that was appealable in two different circuits, since the other circuits tend to say you can appeal that here. So isn't this, if anything, either counsel needs to move for a 54B certification, or maybe this case eventually goes up and the Supreme Court sorts out the conflict that the 10th Circuit has with many of the other circuits.
Yeah, I'll be dead by then, but I'm not a Supreme. I can barely get in the 11th Circuit. I did get a case reversed, which is plaintiff's lawyers are very afraid of the 11th Circuit in Jenkins versus Georgia Port Authority, which basically goes to a premise that we have here, which is when you're thrown out on a motion to dismiss, that's very difficult. I empathize. There's very good lawyers who argued before you before on the City of Fort Myers case, I think it was. You don't have much of a record on this stuff when you're thrown out on a motion to dismiss. As a lawyer, this is mind-blowing what happens here to this woman. I mean, she's a doctor. She's well-trained. She went to the Medical College of Georgia. She's never been sued before in her life. She's got a lawyer, David McBride, who lists himself as a lawyer, who sends the claims file to the Atlanta Defense Council on October 15th, 2013. On October 14th, the day before, he sent it to a firm they use and is defending the case in Utah to find out where their coverage defenses are. I do lots of this stuff. I'm not cerebral, but for one adjuster to have done that, one lawyer to have done that, and then sign affidavits in 2019, that's why I think Judge Belay is wrong. I mean, Judge Ellington in Geico Indemnity versus Whiteside said none of this stuff ran because this is a bad faith case. The bad faith case doesn't start until we got the judgment in state or superior court, I forget which it was, of Cobb County in December of 2018. That's when it starts. And he went back and, you know, he listened to everybody, but I think he's wrong with all due respect. I mean, what has happened here is extremely troubling for a lawyer to sign affidavits in 2019 against their own client. I mean, that's what happened here.
Let me ask you this. Accepting yes, everything you said is true.
Yes, sir.
I threw out one question. I said, could you not seek reconsideration in the district court in Utah of the determination by the judge in Georgia? It gets denied, but that's not, the 10th Circuit has never ruled or said that you can't take an appeal from a final determination where one of its own district courts had rendered a denotion. But let me ask you a slightly different question.
I think it's a smart idea.
Is there anything that stops you from going back to the district judge in Utah and asking the district judge in Utah to certify the question?
To the United States Supreme Court?
No, certify the 54B question to the 10th Circuit.
No. So I don't think there is. I mean, I think you're coming up with better ideas than I
have. So let's suppose you just walk into the district judge and you say, Judge, I want one of two forms of relief. I seek reconsideration. I think the district judge got it wrong, respectfully. Alternatively, if you deny my motion for reconsideration, I'd like you to certify this question under 54B so I could go to the 10th Circuit. He says, denied, denied. The rest of the case goes along its way. The appeal goes up to the 10th Circuit. Now you're appealing from two determinations by the district court in Utah. The district court in Utah denied a motion to reconsider. The district court denied certification under 54B.
Yeah, but what worries me is him saying to me, Mr. Savage, all you're doing is asking me to reconsider a Northern District of Georgia ruling. We don't do that in this 10th Circuit. I'm part of the 10th Circuit. And you know, maybe you haven't read McGeorge's decision to me.
And you might read to the judge from the rule, which says that any such determination may be revised at any time before the entry of judgment, adjudicating right. All the claims. It couldn't be clearer.
Right. I mean, what we did is read when we, I mean, we're doing this in reverse. I mean, we're a small plaintiff's law firm in Savannah, Georgia, who then sees that the 10th Circuit doesn't do what every other circuit does. We write a brief to this court saying what we believe, or we wouldn't write it, which is that he entered a final judgment because he not only entered an order, he entered a judgment in favor of McBride, the lawyer, and in favor of Evolution, the broker here. So that's why we read it, and that's why we came here.
I guess what Judge Marcus is saying, though, even if you're correct that the district judge in Utah is likely to say, no, what are you doing, you can then appeal that to the 10th Circuit and maybe get a different answer from a panel, or maybe they make a different en banc decision, or it even goes further. I know that's not satisfying, but don't you at least have those options?
Sure. I it's something I never thought of to do that, and I think it's a good idea. This is a good discussion. I certainly don't have all the answers. It is awful what happened to this woman by lawyers to sign affidavits against her interests. He in 2019, when they have this declaratory judgment, you need a mainframe to keep track of all these cases. When they have a declaratory judgment, which they get a default judgment in out there, he signs an affidavit against his client repeating what I consider to be attorney-client privilege material that I sent her a release. This is what we're countenancing on what I believe is a technicality, a release, to release him from his actions as a lawyer in this case I mean, this is a very unusual insurance company. Very unusual. And it needs to be addressed. We can't have people that trust the system. You know, I sued Nedra Dodds, but I've gotten to know her. And to be thrown into this situation where you don't have legal counsel that are really helping you in these things has been mind-blowing for the poor woman. And for to have McBride do this stuff and get out on the statute, I mean, I think he's a fiduciary. So if he goes 6 years back, he's got a problem there. But if that's going to be the ruling, I don't want to waste your time on these things, and I respect your decision. What I'm afraid of is I'm a guy without a country. And now I suspect the Tenth Circuit will say, well, we can't do that. You got tossed out of the 11th Circuit, so we're it. I mean, I've never heard of a case that can't be appealed, especially one where we need to teach and re-educate ourselves on what it means to be a lawyer and what we need to do to clients and for clients and not sign affidavits against their interest. There is no statute problem in this case. If you could not read Geico Indemnity versus Whiteside and think we had a statute problem because there's no cause of action that ever accrued for CLJ until they were hit with a $60 million judgment, a verdict, in Cobb County. There was no statute in this case. I mean, they travel under a four-year statute for lawyers, but in bad faith litigation, it's specialized stuff. And that's what Judge Ellington made clear in the Supreme Court decision that came out in 2021. The statute never ran.
I want you to be able to preserve your time for rebuttal. So,
sure. Thank you for your time.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Brian Sprinkle. I represent the appellees in this case. I think in light of what we've just discussed, Judge Marcus is exactly correct that under Rule 54B, this order presently is not subject to an appeal, but because it is under Rule 54B, subject to revision by a district court at any point, the correct course is, of course, for this order then to possibly be reconsidered by the District of Utah. If that would then generate an appealable order to the Tenth Circuit. But the key thing here is under 54B, the order as it currently stands is not an appealable order at this time because it's not a final judgment. There was no express determination that there was no just reason for a delay. Therefore, it falls squarely within Rule 54B. The portion of the order transferring the case is also an interlocutory order. As Mr. Savage has indicated in their briefs, that's not even being appealed at this time. Therefore, that's not an issue. So really, the case at present, there is no appellate jurisdiction. And while I can certainly address the merits of the underlying order if the court would like, I would just reaffirm that the proper course is for the plaintiffs in this case to take some action with the District of Utah, try to generate an order there that could then be properly appealed to the Tenth Circuit.
I take it you agree with Mr. Savage that he can't be left without an appellate right to go to some circuit about the district court's determination dismissing the legal malpractice and breach of fiduciary duty claim, right?
I would agree that, yes, that is a very interesting situation, that if the Tenth Circuit ultimately were to somehow conclude that Rule 54B doesn't say what it expressly says and refuse to decide an issue then that had come from the District of Utah, that would create a unique situation. But I just don't see at this point there being any reason to create a special rule in this circuit.
No, I understand. I appreciate that. But I guess what I'm asking is if you accept the general proposition that the appellant cannot be left without an appellate right to proceed, whether it be in this circuit or the Tenth Circuit, and if you were also right that 54B could not be clearer, and in the absence of that certification, this is an interlocutory appeal without any jurisdiction in this appellate court, if all of that is right, And when the case goes to the district court in Utah, and your colleague gets up and says, I'm making two motions, Judge, a motion for reconsideration, or alternatively, a motion for 54B certification. That's properly before you because the case isn't over until final judgment has been entered, and it hasn't entered. Are you going to get up and say before the district court in Utah, that motion for reconsideration properly was lodged in the district court in Georgia, not in Utah? You don't have the power to do that, nor do you have the power to entertain a 54B motion?
No, we would not present that argument if that is what Mr. Savage were to do once this issue, if this appeal were dismissed and he were then to make that argument in Utah. We would not argue that the Utah court could not in any way consider it. I think under the law of the case doctrine, there's special considerations the District of Utah.
And he may very well say just that. I think the district court in Savannah got it right. I'm not changing it. Motion for reconsideration denied. As for 54B, the whole case isn't over. I'm not going to piecemeal it. Denied. And then when the case goes up to the circuit, would you argue before the 10th Circuit that it was without jurisdiction?
No, we would not make that argument. I think that is exactly right, that is where the appeal should ultimately lie once.
I mean specifically from the dismissal of the two claims that were dismissed on statute of limitations grounds.
Correct. We would not argue that the 10th Circuit does not have jurisdiction to review the order denying a motion for reconsideration. I would certainly at that point argue that under the law of the case, there may be a different level of appellate review that may apply to that, but we would not argue it does not have jurisdiction whatsoever.
Thank you.
Turning, would the court like me to address the merits of the case at this time, or in light of the appellate jurisdiction issues? I don't want to obviously waste the court's time if...
No, thank you.
Well, then that is all I have for the court unless there are any further questions. Thank you.
Doesn't look like you need much rebuttal time, so I've never been clear about what's going to happen, but I appreciate your consideration and your comments.
You appreciate, Mr. Savage, that when it goes off to the district court, if that's what our ruling is, when you're back in Utah on the case, he's not going to say the district court in Utah doesn't have the power to reconsider, and he's not going to say that the district court in Utah doesn't have the power to certify it under 54B.
He is not the lawyer in Utah. That's the problem. Strong and Haney are the lawyers in Utah. They are the people that worked with McBride and got the file first to start to erode any rights that this lady had. But he's an honorable guy. We both went to UVA, and that means something to us.
And I appreciate it because it seems, just talking for myself, you can't be left out without a place to take
right.
an appeal.
Well, I think your comments will be helpful on that. But since I got 10 seconds, as a plaintiff's lawyer, I was talking to Brian the other day. You know, the right to jury trials is really important, and we all know that. And it goes back to our founder, Thomas Jefferson, on his 18th exception that he puts in the Declaration of Independence. They've taken away our rights to jury trials. Granting motions to dismiss is a very dangerous thing. I understand that we're responsible for hurting the economy and stuff like that, but this, in my opinion, and I like Judge Boulay, I admire his service, and he was very cordial to us, it's wrong to do. And I think the Supreme Court, as recently as 2021 in Georgia, said the cause of action starts in 2018. But thank you for your time and your courtesies. I've been before other panels that are not quite so courteous.
Thank you.
That's probably my reflection on me. Thank you all.
The court will be in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise.